This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Cardinal Blaise Cupich, who has been in Chicago for 2.5 years, and he talked to us about various initiatives, particularly in the area of anti-violence, peace in the communities that the Archdiocese is engaging in. They've established a task force that is looking into ways of addressing poverty, unemployment, mental illness, school system, changing demographics, and some long-term goals. The bottom line is, he said, we are all in this together, and the sum of the individual efforts will be greater than the whole. They're even appointing a senior individual to head an archdiocese office to oversee church activities in addressing violence. He said, we must end the belief that life is cheap, and we must all do our part in supporting a safe and sane community in Chicago.
Well, hello, everybody. How are you doing? It's a great day. They put me in charge of the weather, so I think I came through. I really am honored to be invited back here, and I recall the happy memory of your welcoming me shortly after I came to Chicago about 2.5 years ago. For more than a century, your club, City Club, has scheduled these public policy luncheons as a means of creating opportunities for Chicago's most active citizens to engage public figures in open and candid dialogue and discussion about important issues of the day. As an aside, I would say that one of the things that has so impressed me in coming to Chicago is the wealth, the pool of human resources, of real leaders who step forward each and every day to make this city and the environments of government and business and labor work together so very well. Today I want to honor your tradition by giving you an update on the anti-violence and peace-building initiatives, which last April the 4th, the anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, I announced that would be a priority for the Catholic Church. As I said on April 4th, while violence is an issue I was asked about since the day I first arrived in Chicago in November of 2014, I sensed it would be foolhardy to rush in with conclusions and solutions, to say too much. Not only is this problem very complex, but I wanted to be respectful of the many good things that were happening to combat violence and in the many layered causes, and its many layered causes as a result of the efforts within the church and society. So I took my time. I began to meet with people over dinners and other opportunities. Some of you in this room have helped to arrange. And they introduced me to the city and others. These interactions with pastors of various faith communities, civic, business, and labor leaders convinced me that there exists a tremendous goodwill to work together to improve the situation of violence in our city. I also took time to review what we in the Archdiocese have been doing to address some of the causes of violence. I was especially interested to know that what we have been doing for youth. For it's obvious to me that our city's violence is impacting young people most of all. While, as I will recount here, some of what I discovered, we have been at this work in our church for 1.75 centuries, I could not ignore the fact that things seemed to be getting worse, and there was a need to study whether we were doing the right things in the right quantities and in the right places. So, a bit over a year ago, I called together a task force, a Blue Ribbon Committee, and I charged them to create an inventory, the result of which they shared with me this past spring, an inventory of the work that we were doing. Their work reveals an impressive array of programs and initiatives, which I noted have developed over a long history in Chicagoland, dating back from our early history 175 years ago. From those earliest days, priests, religious, lay workers have created and staffed ministries to fight poverty, to give children educational opportunities, to help with unemployment, respond to racism, family instability, mental illness, and to create respect for life. This work and support has come in the form of settlement houses, hospitals, orphanages, work and civil rights support, ministries of care in our parishes, and a wide network of education in our school program and school system. That tradition, that proud tradition, persists today. Our schools this year will educate over 75,000 students, a significant number of them coming from minority families who are not even Catholic. Catholic Charities, one of the largest social service organizations in the region, helps someone every 30 seconds in a variety of services. This year in particular, they are again participating in two different programs, one summer Chicago Plus and summer youth employment program, by hiring 415 young people. With funds that are provided in a national collection called the Campaign for Human Development, I was able this spring to sign grants totaling $250,000 to resource various programs, poverty programs, from housing projects to microloans for minority startup businesses, from domestic violence to restorative justice efforts. Established in 1969, the Campaign for Human Development mission is simply to address the root causes of poverty in America through promotion and support of community-controlled self-help organizations, recognizing that those who are directly affected by unjust systems and structures have the best insight into knowing how to change them. We also have Mercy Home, Maryville, Marillac House, Precious Blood Ministry, all likewise provide invaluable family and youth services, giving people opportunities through mentoring, strengthening communities, leveling the playing field in society through restorative justice programs. I also learned that so much is happening at the parish level, with the majority of our 344 parishes in Lake and Cook County supporting food pantries. Many also have legal and health clinics, which provide parish nurses and mental health resources. Other parishes sponsor settlement houses for people who are displaced, resource the gun buyback efforts, are active in rebuilding neighborhoods, promote youth employment programs such as Strong Futures, as we have at St. Sabina, organize sports in the great tradition of the CYO program here in the Archdiocese of Chicago. From its very beginning, CYO aimed at bringing together thousands of young people of all races and religions from Chicago's racially segregated neighborhoods to take part in sports and educational programming. And that continues to this day. In a word, the Archdiocese of Chicago has had programs that address the root causes of violence. You have been at it much longer than I came here. Programs that address poverty, racism, family instability, mental illness, and disregard for human life. You've been doing this for 175 years, and I am committed to bringing that tradition to fruition in our time and building on it. Each in its own way not only helps those in critical need, but addresses many of the root causes of poverty. But I want to add right away that I fully realize that there are many other civic and religious groups and organizations. There are first responders, churches, social agencies, foundations, and other non-for-profits, which are no less remarkable in their contributions. So my point is simply that when we look at the full panorama of all the activities, those of my community of faith and so many others, we cannot help but be encouraged by the fact that for generations and up to our day, this city has been blessed by countless Chicagoans who each and every day get out of bed, dedicate their lives, and work to promote peace and social justice in our city. It is a tradition we should be rightly proud of. This is a story sometimes that is left untold, especially as the violence of the day grabs the headlines and draws all the oxygen out of the news cycle. With all this in mind, I asked my team to help develop some short-term, but also some long-term priorities, strategies, and goals to build on our 175-year history. So let me address those today. First of all, the short-term goals and priorities. I thought it was important to increase awareness that we all have a stake here in Chicago in improving the situation. We began that, as I announced on April 4th, with the Good Friday Peace March. We had about 1,600 people from all walks of life coming together with voices from law enforcement, victims' families, and others who spoke movingly of how violence affected them. Subsequently, there have been other parish walks and gatherings. A high school got together and had a peace walk because they were inspired by what was happening. There are rallies over the summer, such as a Peacemakers in the Streets. All of these are designed to bring people together, law enforcement, communities, victims, families, to remind us that we all have a stake and we all are responsible. We are all in this together. These gatherings also break through the mentality that this situation is hopeless, or worse, that we just have to accept this as the new normal. These gatherings provide a needed reminder that just because we can't do everything doesn't mean we shouldn't do something. Along the same line, we have already begun working with Chicago Community Trust on the table programs. We had an initial pilot program this past spring, and that leads me to believe that with our parish infrastructure and our communications network, we can leverage the expertise of On the Table to bring people of diverse backgrounds together. We believe this model holds great promise for person-to-person contact and breaking down barriers between Chicagoans and, in fact, inspiring them to work together in new ways to make our community stronger, safer, and more dynamic. A second priority is to increase the capacity and reach of our current programs that address the root causes of violence. We collected data for our inventory, and we overlaid it with the information from the Archdiocese and the University of Chicago. You see it here on the slide. Their crime lab provided us important information by which we could pinpoint not only where the violence is occurring, but where we already have some resources. This slide here is but one example of how that data reads, giving us experiential knowledge of which communities are most deeply affected and where we should target our resources to help existing programs to increase their capacity. And it's for this reason that we established the Instrument of Peace Fund in the amount of $250,000. The intention of this fund is to help those local community-based programs of people of all faith that are already doing extraordinary work and yet need a small grant to make them even more effective, particularly in the troubled areas. I'm happy to say that we're going to award 5 charter grants this fall as a first phase of making those funds available. We also, in terms of a third short-term initiative, was to create an archdiocesan office to oversee, envision, and execute the Archdiocese's future role in addressing violence in Chicago and the surrounding areas. This will be a senior position in the Archdiocese. We have already secured funding from donors and foundations to support this, and we have issued a call for applications. It's clear to me that too often we in the church, and for that matter in society, while doing some extraordinary things, we're all working in silos. We lack coordination, and the data from our inventory provides us now with an opportunity to bring these forces together and to coordinate our efforts. This position will also be charged with external engagement, by which we can partner with civic and other organizations in the city, government, church, philanthropy, business, and labor. I'm convinced that we could benefit from a similar exercise of developing an inventory of what services are available and where within the city. And so I invite others to work with me to make sure that we coordinate those services well and let those, especially who are first responders, know where they can go for help when it's needed. Such an effort will allow us to learn from each other, also avoid unnecessary duplications, and create an awareness that in the city, that people of goodwill want to work together, can work together, and thus we will be modeling for others that they should do the same. And then there are some long-term priorities and goals. We intend to create new hubs for anti-violence and other services. We have already started this with the donation to Catholic Charities of a facility from the Austin Bank. We hope to open it as the Augustine Tolton Peace Center. Father Tolton, who ministered in Chicago, was the first African-American Catholic priest in the United States. Like the Peace Corner on Madison Street, the Tolton Center, with the cooperation of local parishes, Catholic Charities, Maryville, Loretto Hospital, and Dominican University, will offer food distribution, support for parents and families, a safe environment for counseling, work training programs, crisis center, and housing assistance. A second long-term priority, which we are going to invest time and effort in, and that is legislative and societal advocacy. The first one has to be gun laws. As I mentioned in my op-ed in the fall of 2015, living in a society where life is cheap and crime is glamorized and there is a ready supply of firearms, it is no longer enough for those of us involved in civic leadership and pastoral care to comfort the bereaved and the bewildered families of victims of gun violence. It is time to take meaningful and swift action to address violence in our society. We must band together to call for gun control legislation. We must act in ways that promote the dignity and the value of human life, and we must do it now. I will continue to work towards what many consider a daunting task, namely sensible gun restrictions, a promise I have made not only to victims, but also to law enforcement who support such efforts. Such a comprehensive legislative approach has to recognize that most of the guns we pick up off the streets here in Chicago come from states where laws are more lax, and that no rational being can believe military-style automatic weapons belong in the hands of ordinary citizens, which puts at risk not only our citizens, but especially the dedicated men and women who serve on our police force. Today, I saw in the paper the image of the AK-47 that was used to kill a 9-year-old child, a little boy who was soon to be 10 years old, a picture of him hugging his dog because of an assault weapon. A second long-term priority that has to do with advocacy, fighting racism and segregation. While factors such as the lack of support and the breakdown of families, poor access to quality education and health services, unemployment and poor housing all add to a sense of hopelessness that gives rise to violence in the heart of young people, we cannot ignore the destructive power of racism. This grave sin underlies much of what is wrong with society today. Many do not see God in the other person and seek to help those who appear different from us at a distance. All one needs to do is to take a night ride with the superintendent, as I have done on several occasions, to see that Chicago is highly segregated, a fact that both causes and compounds the problems we face in bringing an end to violence. The recent Metropolitan Planning Council report noted that if Chicago reduced its level of segregation to just that of the national average, murders would fall by 30%. Racism also leads to discrimination in employment, housing, and education, trapping generation after generation in poverty. Segregation is not only an issue in low-income communities or communities of color. Everyone pays a price, measured in lost income, lives, and education. All of this contributes to a culture where life is cheap. And when life is cheap, and guns are cheaper, we end up with an entire generation of individuals who do not value themselves or anyone else. The result is that rootless, disaffected young people gather into gangs that provide an alternative structure and group affiliation. And the irony is that the lack of concern for those whose lives end in gun violence only adds to the impression of these young people that life is indeed cheap. I was reminded over the weekend that the Sunday morning program this week with George Stephanopoulos most often ends with a list of those who are killed in action in the service of our country. We rightly mourn their passing and honor their sacrifice. Many of our pastors have begun mentioning by name, in a similar way, those who are killed in our city in their weekend masses. If we want young people not to believe the myth that human life is not disposable, we have to treat them as not disposable. Should we not today mourn the loss in our city since Friday of this week of 11 who were killed, including that 9-year-old child, Gustavo Garcia, and the community activist, Willie Cooper, and find a place in our hearts also for the 46 others who were shot and wounded? We must treat them all with respect. Since April 4th, in our announcement of this peace initiative and anti-violence program, I've been gratified by the response, the outpouring of goodwill from people who want to make a difference, which we should tap into rather than feeling that nothing can be done. We are convinced that the experience we have acquired in the Catholic Church over the 175-year history has given us many tools to create and implement changes in society that are necessary to stop violence. But we all need to work together within our own community and also invite partnerships with so many others who are doing already so much good. By coordinating the efforts of all those working to solve the many aspects of this problem, we believe that we can build solutions that are greater than the sum of the parts. Today, I'm here to invite your partnership and offer my hand in friendship and cooperation to you, leaders, to people of all faiths and none, to business and labor, elected officials and government agencies. I do so with the confidence of someone who has become aware in these past 2.5 years that there are so many other citizens who not only want us to improve the situation, but are in fact already out there working each and every day to that end. My plea is that we all join them, that we all do our part. It can begin by just finding a program that you can support in our city, by some signing up, contacting us to help and join in our efforts, by going out to one of the summer neighborhood programs, such as the block party at St. Sabina's this Friday night at 6 o'clock. And it'll be scheduled again on August 25th. Free food, good company, and great music. At the opening of the new year, 2017, Pope Francis dedicated his World Day of Peace message to nonviolence. On that occasion, he issued a fourfold challenge to all of humanity: to build a society, communities, and businesses by acting as peacemakers, to show mercy by refusing to discard people, harm the environment, or seek to win at any cost, to face conflict head on, to resolve it and make it a link in the chain of a new process, and finally, to choose solidarity as a way of making history and building friendships in society For everything in the world is interconnected, as the Pope says. When Pope Francis heard of our efforts here in Chicago, he told me that we are doing precisely these things that he advocated in that message, prompting him to write to the people of Chicago a letter on April 4th. He addressed this special word to people like you who are here, leaders in our community. Words now which I will end with. He said, "I assure you of my support for the commitment and the many other local leaders who are making that you are making to promote nonviolence as a way of life and a path for peace in Chicago. The consistent practice of nonviolence has broken barriers, bound up wounds, healed nations, and it can heal Chicago. Thank you."
A special box of the cannoli to take back to, you know, the folks at Holy Name. Okay, great. Thank you very much, Cardinal Supic. And we're now open to questions. So anybody who has a question, I see a hand up here. I see we have a few coming in. How can we encourage our local and national leaders to govern with humility and a love of humanity? We seem to be in a crisis of leadership. How do we change this? As I said, we have very easy questions. Yeah.
Well, I've always said we're a democracy. We get the leaders we deserve because we elect them. So we have to become involved in the political process. If we don't like it, we can change it. We don't have a totalitarian government. So that if people have difficulty with those who govern, there is a way in which they can respond and change that. And so it means let's not sit back. Let's get involved. Read, get to know the issues, and take action. That's what I would say.
Thank you. This question is from Lori Lightfoot, who's the president of the Chicago Police Board, former chair of the Police Accountability Task Force, who's not a member of the City Club. Lori, we invite you to join the City Club. $50 a year, tax deductible. Okay. It's actually a compliment, Your Eminence. Thank you, Your Eminence, for consistently making the issue of violence a focal point of your important work. Please keep challenging us to put faith ahead of fear. So if we want to make a little bit of a question out of it, how do we go about putting faith ahead of fear?
Well, I think it's just to be reminded, fear gets us nowhere. Fear separates us, it divides us, it paralyzes us. Faith, of course, allows us to break down barriers and realize that there's goodness in each and every person. We just have to tap into it. So from my perspective, of course, I'm in the faith business. So, I mean, this is enlightened self-interest on my part. So thanks for the question.
Okay. This is from John Holden of Preservation Chicago. John, where are you? Okay, you too. We want you to join the City Club. To what extent will the Archdiocese work with developers to repurpose closed churches in a sensitive fashion?
I believe we have really a first-class group of people now who help us with our real estate. And we're open to suggestions. We have a wonderful committee. Our finance committee of the Archdiocese as well is populated by folks who have great expertise. So if there are ideas out there, we're willing to talk to people about that. We're interested in that. We want to make sure that we're good citizens, that we use the resources we have for the common good. And yet, at the same time, we have to be responsible as good stewards. Just remember, too, that any time any of these various properties are sold because the churches are closed or the schools are no longer in existence because of changing demographics, the assets have to go with the people who go to the new parish. So they don't belong to the archdiocese. We have to be respectful of that. We want to make sure that we're just a broker on their behalf to make sure there's good stewardship.
Thank you. This is from Gail Leahy, who's a City Club member, longtime member of the City Club. Wow, she's already read yesterday's New York Times. Some of the rest of us, it takes all week. There was a quote in the New York Times on Sunday. Cardinal Tobin of New Jersey and yourself are breathing new life into the American Catholic Church. Thank you. Could you please explain how your goals differ from those whom we refer to as the old guard?
Fake news.
Tremendous, and you can quote that one. It's a City Club. You never know what we're going to get. Patrick Moorhead is a City Club member. Pat, where are you? Back there. Great. Based upon current projections, what will the demographics and the structure of parishes look like 10 years from now?
It's we do have some data about where demographics are moving, trends that are publicly known and the city uses and the county as well. So we rely on that. We're right now involved in a five-year program called Renew My Church, by which we're bringing that information to groupings of parishes. We have 90 groupings for the 340-some parishes. And over the next 5 years, those groupings will work together to see how they can revitalize their communities and make sure that all the parishes within the grouping are sustainable but also vibrant. And there are some markers by which they'll be judged in terms of that viability and sustainability. So we're going to share that information, but the decision of how the footprint of the archdiocese is going to look is going to be involve a consultation at the local level. So that's yet to be determined. And I'm kind of having a hands-off here because and like other dioceses that have made decisions in terms of parish closures, what stays open, have been made in a centralized way, I believe that we're going to create a better product in the long run by engaging people and creating ownership at the local level.
Okay, thank you. This is from Dee Dee Van Dyke with Presence Health over here on the right. Cardinal, could you comment on the progress of your efforts to partner with Muslim leaders to promote peace, respect, and understanding in our country and communities?
I was asked by the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops to be the liaison for the national dialogue with the Muslim community in the United States, and so I've taken up that work as of the beginning of this new year. But I also have met with local leaders as well. And the members of the Muslim community here in Chicago and around the nation are afraid. Their kids are scared, and parents are scared for their kids because they see that they can be easily radicalized because they are being pushed into a ghettoized mentality in society, and their lives are not respected, their faith is not respected. So we need to keep people talking to each other, reaching out to them. And I think that the more that we – this business of demonizing or – predefining people by the way they look, the religion that they practice, or where they came from, is not only un-American, but it's going to hurt America. So I think we need to have that ongoing way of working together, and I'm committed to that. I think that it's good for the country, it's good for people of faith, and it's good for young people.
Thank you very much. This is from my neighbor, Ed Tracy, who's the president of the Roxbury Road Creative. Are you considering following Pope Francis's lead by posting a sign? If so, what do you think it would say?
The Pope has a sign on his door, Vietato Lamentarsi, which means no complaining. That's a good one. I would like that. I don't have a sign on my door, but he's provoked me to think about one. That's not a bad one, though, to use. I could, although I think my collaborators in the office would put it on their door when they see me coming.
Thank you, Ed Tracy. That was a hell of a question. Okay. Dennis Ryan from Holy Cross Hospital and the Sinai Health Systems. Many of the most vulnerable will be abandoned by the Senate health care bill. However, the USCCB, the Council of Catholic Bishops, how will they best be equipped to defend the rights of health care for all?
Our conference has made a statement on the latest bill saying that it's morally unacceptable. They have pledged to work with elected officials to come up with a better solution, but the way it's written now, we're advocating, and we've used our resources. The bishops around the country have been asked to talk to their elected officials about this bill. So there's a lot going on in terms of dialogue at the local level that maybe in the national news it doesn't cover all the time. But I know, talking to my brother bishops, they are calling their senators and representatives about this and expressing to them their concern that there are too many people who are going to be left out of this situation.
Thank you. Whoa. This is from Charisse Williams. Charisse, where are you? Over there. She said she's the Illinois State Treasurer. I thought maybe some change had occurred in the last couple of hours, but I think she's one of Treasurer Friedrich's key people. She's also a member of St. Sabina and a proud Catholic. You're going to be here on Thursday when Father Flager speaks, I hope, of course. How can we get more black and brown youth involved in the Catholic Church is her question.
Well, that's important to do, but I'm also concerned about the youth, period. Becoming involved in our communities. Young people are pulled away from organized anything because they have so many options today. And there are ways in which they can interact with each other that go against actual community experiences. So that is a major hurdle for us. I do see the importance, however, of minority young people coming together because they are more at risk. But I would just say what Father Flager and other pastors are doing in our minority communities are terrific. They're looking for opportunities. This block party coming up, he's going to have 1,000 people, he tells me, on Friday night. And a lot of them are young people. When I was there for the march on that Friday night, it was populated by young folks. So I think it's just to organize and to make those moments available. We're also looking at a youth on the table forum that originated in Argentina that is a morphing of the on the table, but because it involves sports and arts. So we're looking at ways in which we can be more creative. But I'm concerned about all the youth because I tell Catholics all the time, you know, do you want to be the last Catholic in your family? Because the young people today are really having difficulty with organized anything, organized religion, or organized anything.
Okay, we have time for a couple more questions. This is from Elsie Sai Nibar, who's a Presbyterian ruling elder. Her question is, today's social acceptance of LGBT and their rights is at its highest level. What is the stand of the Catholic Church on this subject, especially on same-sex marriage? Thank you, Cardinal Supich.
Thank you. Well, we have always wanted to make sure that we start the conversation by saying that all people are of value and their lives should be respected, and we should respect them. That is why I think that just the terms gay and lesbian, LGBT, all of those names that people appropriate to themselves should be respected. People should be called the way that they want to be called rather than us coming up with terms that maybe we're more comfortable with. So it begins with that. The second is we have said before that we believe that marriage is between a man and a woman for the good of society. And it is, I know that, for instance, there have been other legislations that are domestic partnerships that people have had. But there is something we have always felt about the sacrament or the relationship of marriage between a man and woman that's responsible for perpetuating the human race that is of a different quality. And it is not the same. That has been our position. It doesn't mean that we're disrespectful of other people, but we think that there is something unique about a man and a woman coming together, giving their life to each other, and bringing life into the world. Society has a role, it seems to me, in supporting that in a different and qualitative way. That's where we're coming from.
Thank you, Cardinal. And I guess as chairman, I get to ask the final question. When you spoke to us 2 years ago, you had recently arrived in Chicago, and you brought with yourself a reputation of creating a very mean barbecue sauce, both in Omaha and in Spokane. Have you had a chance to add to the barbecue sauce? Are you considering making it commercially available to some of us? Because it really is good.
I would only say that I've really had up my game because for Chicago, it's not spicy enough. Thank you.
That's terrific. That's terrific.